Welcome to Have You Heard, where we talk about issues at the intersection of agriculture and engineering. Let's get started. Here are your hosts, Morgan Hayes and Josh Jackson.
Welcome. This is the Have You Heard podcast. This is episode 60. Today we're going to talk a little bit about small ruminant heat stress. I'm Morgan Hayes, an assistant professor in biosystems and agricultural engineering here at the University of Kentucky, focusing on livestock facilities. And in my personal life, I farm in Boyle County, Kentucky with my husband. It's a commercial cattle and hay operation.
And I'm Josh Jackson, assistant professor in biosystems and agriculture engineering as well, where I focus on precision livestock farming. And in my personal life, we raise registered Angus cattle and also have some goats and focus on some hay production as well.
Okay, Josh. So our big topic today is going to be small ruminant heat stress, because we've had a pretty warm couple weeks, and it looks like we're going to have another sort of warm weekend here coming into 4th of July, and just chat a little bit about that. But before we do that, we need to do an update on the farm. It's been sort of a rough couple weeks for me. I've had a couple family things and some colds and diseases coming through, and so just an update on what's been happening on the farm.
Let's see. So we've been moving hay. We moved some hay, sold a little bit of hay, even though, you know, there's not a lot, hasn't been really high yields this year. We just went ahead and sold some. And then we also have been moving some cows, so rotating cows through a pasture, having on a 17-acre field, but it's broken up into three partitions. And so just rotating our main herd through there. So those 53 animals probably been on 17 acres for almost a month now, but it was a really good one of the fields that I actually fertilized fairly heavily over the years. And so they've been doing fairly well in that portion. We did have finished our calving. We had a set of twins. We lost one, but that would go sometimes. And then just general equipment maintenance. So a lot of our stuff, we went through the first cutting. We have one more place, smaller place to cut, but just doing all the maintenance to make sure if and when we get a second cutting, we'll be ready.
Yeah, the weather this year has been really interesting. We've had sort of dryish weather and then some rain, and we had some very heavy rain and some storms that came through in the last week. We were lucky that we missed some of the baseball size hail that was, maybe 20 or 30 miles away from us. So not very far for either of us, and some wind damage. We actually had two buildings damaged with wind in this last set of storms that came through. We had some earlier damage where it had moved a post a little bit. Now the post has moved a lot. Okay. And it also blew out the back end of one of our sheds off of a tobacco barn. So the barn was encased and hay was inside it, and that back end is gone. So now we have to tarp it, try and keep it protected. Moving forward, we'll see how that goes. That's going to be a challenge. And then we have to find someone to come in and do repair work, It's easy to find someone to do repair work right around now. Sarcasm is just dripping off of my lips.
They're still fixing stuff from this March.
Yeah, people are really backed up. We have some wind damage on the house that also, hopefully we get another bid this weekend. We've been actively seeking out people that will do work on a couple of these things. And it's hard to find contractors for a number of things, but barn work in particular is really hard to find contractors for. There's just a limited number that are available, and they are so booked up that they don't even want to come out and do bids because they know that they have enough work to get through this year and maybe next year already on the books. So it's a tricky business, but we definitely have to get that. And then we have another barn that racked. It's a small, what was an old corn crib, traditional built corn crib. So not a vertical structure, but one that actually had sidewalls on it, where there was wood sidewalls, and it was actually a concrete floor to store corn on the cob.
Okay.
So an old style corn, I would describe it. And we used it to store hay and some other things. It worked fine for that, but now it is a racked building, and now we have to maybe repurpose that area of the farm. We're not talking about farmstead layouts today, but probably a good topic actually in light of all this stuff that's been happening, because we're really doing a lot of work in and amongst all the other work we're doing, really evaluating what structures are being used and what the areas of the farm are being used and how we want to move forward with something. So that in and of itself is going to be pretty interesting. So we'll figure that out in the next little bit. But that damage, on top of that, we're rotating all of our cattle, traditional things that you do at this time of year. repairing a couple pieces of equipment. That first cutting of hay is done, just getting things ready to go for second cutting. Most things went smoothly. If I had wood right here, I'd be knocking on it right now. I hate to say that because it could be really ugly next time we go to cut. But it was a first cutting was successful. So just getting a couple minor things repaired in that regard, cutter bars, things like that. Just make sure all the teeth are attached, all the little metal rivets are are really in place the way they need to be, and they're
none of your hay bond teeth are clattering.
Yeah, nothing clattering. That's exactly how I would describe it. That so it's just minor little repair work just to make sure everything is operational as it can be.
Okay.
And then aside from that, we have one group of cattle that still has not been worked, and it's a fall group. So they're on a mineral that has fly control in it. They're doing fine, but they haven't gotten their fly tags. And they haven't gotten their spring vaccine. Our traditional vaccine program is much heavier towards the fall. So it's not such an issue that this group only hasn't gotten their booster. We just do VL5 twice a year. And for anyone that doesn't know, VL5 is a reproductive vaccine. And we do it inside of another vaccine. It's in combination with some other things. But we give it twice a year specifically because of the VL5. Are in an area that has a lot of lepto in the water. I don't actually know that we need Vibrio twice a year. It just happens to be that we purchase a VL5 as a thing, but there's five.
It comes as a package.
It comes as a package, and there's five lepto strains, and we need at least two or three of those strains to be really strong in our area because we get a lot of it in the water. A lot of, I don't want to call them pests, but smaller mammals carry it, and they defecate, and it gets in the water. And it sits in our ponds in this area. It's very common. And we suspect we've had a couple slipped calves, and we think that lepto is likely why, because there was no other reason for that. And they were not really early slips, but they also weren't super late. There was nothing that was like anatomically an issue, and there was also nothing that was like, oh, it was just a hot summer and we had a heat wave at the wrong time. And it was sort of in that middle ground where I think lepto was a likely culprit of it. At least that's what our vet has suggested. So we now are pretty adamant about getting that second vaccine in. And these cows are pregnant. So it's important we get that vaccine just to make sure that their immunity is as high as it can be here as they come into that third trimester. Because we don't want to have late-term abortions. That would be devastating, especially with the market as strong as it is for calves right now. losing any that we don't have to would be a really poor decision. And any eye issues are also expensive. So for all those reasons, they need their fly tags in their ear and they need to get their VL5 shot right now.
And it's, you said the deer and the small mammals. We've been doing a little bit of battle with the raccoons and feed rooms. And it's just that time of year where they're just out and about and attacking your feed rooms, gardens, pretty much everywhere.
Yep. And they spread it. So they're a pretty known spreader of a number of things. So that's high priority for us. We also have one water tank. We put in that water line. We talked about that last time. But the water tank is not fully operational yet. So that's another goal for this next. But we continue to work on small parts of that project. So each week we get a little bit closer. So the heat tube is in. And the pipe is run up and all of that part is done. So, and the line's all covered over. That wasn't done last time. And so
just got to pour some concrete.
We still got to pour a little pad and then set the tank on there. But
okay, so you're pretty close though.
We're very close. Good day of focus and we could have that done. One good day of focus is a lot for me at this point in my life. So we'll see. But yeah, just keep cranking away on these sort of tasks that are on the back burner.
And so you mentioned like today's topic is going to be heat stress. And so you have the alpacas, we got this heat, not a heat wave, but definitely we're having that seeing an increased temperature this week.
Yep.
It hasn't been as bad to date, but then it's getting ready to change on us.
Yeah. It looks like this weekend, we're going to see 90s for a few days, 92, 93 as our highs. And that's definitely enough to create some heat stress for small ruminants. I have fiber animals. So for us, the biggest thing is that we shear. And we sheared right around Memorial Day. Thank goodness we had a mild May. Some years we struggle with if that's too late, but then other years we've sheared early May, and then we've had a cold snap, and we've been a little stressed because we don't have a barn. So for us, that reasonable spot is that we do it in later May, And then we have to manage heat if there's any earlier because we don't shear until the end of May. But we did get shearing done. That's a good first step. I assume you've got both the sheep because your kids are showing.
Yep.
And then you also have the goats, which I am assuming don't get sheared.
The goats do not get sheared. So the sheep, they're in a tobacco barn. They're in the center alley. So they have pretty good airflow going through the barn. And it's probably a 40 by, we'll say about 96 or so.
Okay.
Barn. So it gets pretty good airflow just being a tobacco, fairly tall tobacco barn as well. But, you know, when we have heat like this, we'll go ahead and put a circulation fan on. So just to get some extra airflow, if they are feeling hot, we actually just sheared them because we put the show shear on them last weekend. So we're not too concerned. Still have a fan, easy access to water and feed. They should be okay. The goats, a lot of our traditional heat abatement strategy or heat management strategies, we have a lot of trees along fence line. And so we have, you know, some years considered always just go in there and top off the trees, the fence line, just kill them all. But, you know, it is helpful. We have it on both, you know, north, south, east, west. They kind of have trees along each fence line so they can go find the best place that works for them or rotate. And we're not hopefully
overusing
one spot, you know, because then if they get one spot, they're going to tear up all the roots around the tree and then it dies and then you lost your shade tree.
Exactly.
We also had some trouble because a lot of our trees that had been along the fence line were ash trees. And so had to go through and cut some of those that are looking a little precarious. And other ones just fall as they see fit.
Yeah. Yeah, we lost a couple of trees. In fact, we lost one cherry in that storm as well. And we actually had to move cows out of a field just to, because we know the wilt's coming.
Yep.
We got them out before the cherry started to wilt.
And I guess explain a little bit of danger associated
with that. Yeah, and it's not just, I think it's actually for any ruminant that there's, cherry trees when they start to wilt, they will produce poisonous compounds, arsenic in particular, as part of that process of the wilting of the leaves. So it is, I guess, a protective mechanism within the tree. I don't know what else I would describe it as. I don't understand how it's come to be. It's very interesting evolutionarily. But it's a reason that a lot of people avoid having cherry trees in their fence lines. This one happens to be a large cherry tree. In fact, we debated if it was actually a cherry tree because it was such a large tree. And we're still not 100% sure, but one, we had a branch that was large enough. It's what we call in this area widowmaker. That was being held up by a smaller branch, and the cows thought it was a nice thing to rub on. That was in and of itself enough to make me concerned enough to move them out of the field that they were in, and then on top of it, the leaves looked enough like a cherry leaf that we're not taking the risk. We'll get the whole thing down. We'll use the skid steer. We'll pull down those bigger limbs so that they don't fall on an animal, cow, calf, etc. And then we will also move all of that dead material in, pile it up, and let it wilt, and or we let the animals come back to finish grazing the field that they were supposed to be in. But we would do the same thing with alpacas or any other small ruminant. That is one of the challenges with having those trees, that ash trees are notorious for falling, but there's other ones that take damage with these storms that we've had this year. So
we've had a lot of the March storms, and we had the storms here of late, and so it's just been a lot of wind challenges, extreme weather events.
Yeah, I mean, thank goodness nothing more severe than some wind damage for us, so I'm not complaining, but definitely something to sort of be careful. Got to go out and check all the fence lines and things when these things happen.
So what do you do with, so I said with my, you know, the goats, we have them out there, we have, you know, shade available to them. What do you do with the alpacas as far as shade? Like, how do you maintain, so are you shearing them? When do you shear, you know?
Yeah, so that late May shear is really nice because we have a short coat through the summer. And the one thing I will say is that when you go to shear them, you don't want them wet when you shear them. It's not good for the fiber to have moisture in it if you're going to try and sell it later. So they need to be good and dry when you shear them. But then after shearing, we can put water on them. So I know that both goats and sheep tend to oppose being wetted down. It is, from an engineering perspective, wetting an animal and moving water over the back of an animal is a convection process, and it's very effective.
Yes.
So drenching in horses, spraying down an animal, even using a spraying system for cattle, all of these are really effective because those water droplets end up evaporating off of the skin, and they pull a lot of heat as they have that phase change of that water. So you can pull a lot of heat off. And even if you don't have that evaporation, just the movement of that water that's below the body temperature of the animal, and it doesn't have to be cold, but cooler than, say, 100 degrees, because that's the core body temperature, Fahrenheit. Core body temperature of the animal is important because you want enough temperature difference that you can actually pull heat from that body with that water. So both that evaporation process, which is useful, but even more importantly, that convection process where that water flows across the side of an animal and pulls heat from the skin are really useful for pulling heat out. So most of our alpaca like it. We will use a hose maybe 2 or 3 times a day and just spray it, and they will literally run under it.
Really?
We'll use like a shower. We'll almost like shower them out in the field, and they love it. We have 2 or 3 that won't, but we also will use sometimes like a kiddie pool and put like 4 inches of water in the bottom, and some of them will go and lay in it. Some of them just want their legs wet, so they'll put their feet in it. And then sometimes they're a pain in the butt, and they will stick their feet into their water buckets, and that makes me really angry. So we have to protect the water buckets so they don't play in them.
Right.
I don't know if you have that problem with any of your animals. I don't know that, because goats and sheep tend to oppose being around the water. The alpacas are a little bit more water friendly. I would say more than half of ours really like the water. Another maybe half of what's left, half of that, getting us up to 3/4, like the water in extreme circumstances, but don't generally love the water. And then that last 25% use limited water, but still like it on their feet. They splash in it and play.
Huh. Yeah, I think for the sheep, at least from my experience, have been relatively averse to going by the stream. You know, we have them, have the kids occasionally take them on walks, and they've been fairly averse to just being by the stream. They don't seem to like water on there.
Okay.
But from what I've observed.
Yeah.
And that's also been what I've heard from some of the sheep producers as well.
Yeah.
The goats, you know, they are by, like, we do have some of our, you know, trees along the stream. They will stay cool down there, but they're unlike the cattle. Well, the cattle will go and wade.
They don't wade into it.
They don't seem to wade into it.
Yeah, I mean, I think water to drink is important, but I think water as a cooling strategy is also important for some animals, but other animals are less inclined that way. I think I do want to acknowledge that we do have an extension pub on heat stress for goats that we wrote with Katie Jackson, who's related to Josh here. So no bias, but I also with her. So maybe I'm biased a little bit, but I think it's a really nice pub for someone that's more interested in heat stress for small ruminants. There's not a lot of good publications on the small ruminant side. And that one does a really nice job. It actually has a heat humidity index that we sort of worked out and created based upon some of the data that's out there. And it kind of helps. That heat humidity index is something that we don't always talk about, but it accounts for both the temperature and the relative humidity and allows for more susceptibility to heat stress as it gets more humid. Because even if they don't go in the water, they still are using evaporation through their respiration panting processes as a cooling mechanism, and a pretty significant one. They're actually pretty effective at it. And some goats are good sweaters. This is a very interesting thing about goats. For anyone that doesn't know anything about goats, they're good sweaters, and their coat color is not necessarily indicative of how they handle heat stress. It's actually the skin color underneath that's indicative of it. You can have a black-coated animal with a lighter skin coat underneath there, and they actually tend to do better on heat stress, which is not what people would expect.
That's surprising, because you expect that black coat to absorb all the heat.
Yep, and actually, some of the black-coated animals are very heat-tolerant, just because of where they're from, their sweating mechanisms, and some other things.
Some of those are from South Africa.
Exactly, and some are from a good area, and they have some good resilience to that heat load. So it is sort of interesting that you do have to do a little bit more of a deep dive in the goats. For people that are from a cattle background, this is like if you had a Brahma. Like,
yep.
If you have a Brahma, it's going to probably do okay at 90 degrees here in Kentucky. Whereas if you have nice woolly animals like me that have lots of hair on them, you know, that came from the mountain regions in France, they don't like it as much. So just a reality of the type of animal, and you get a very different growth curve with those animals, a different finishing weight.
Different characteristics.
Different characteristics, and it's because of where they're from, and the goats have the same things.
Yep, different characteristics, different performances.
Yep.
be expected.
That's kind of a highlight for people that have not really spent a lot of time with small ruminants. Do you have any other strategies? I will say that I think the fan is really important, especially for animals that are more enclosed and in smaller spaces, or animals that are on feed. Like if you're feeding out lambs to get to a feed weight and you're trying to push them through the summer, and they're not gonna like water on them, and you're gonna keep them under roof, just the shade in and of itself helps. But those fans really do help, especially as you get more animal numbers and they're sort of like more limited on space, a little more heat load in the barn, and they can be really valuable.
And so if we do have access to some barns, but you know, it's mainly we have trees and shade out there. It's just having something out there for them, and they have a separate drinking water source as well. So it's not like they're drinking from the stream. They have city water essentially that's available to them. So really, you know, our show animals, any animals in the barn, we're putting fans on them. So we have 3 or 4 turbo fans where we just put on the animals when it's hot like this, if they come and take advantage of it, essentially. Yeah,
that's a good idea. I mean, especially for an animal that you're showing, you don't want to like pull it back at this point in the year. It's not ideal. Spend a lot of time and money and energy and frustration getting the children ready to show them. So better take full advantage of all that effort you put in. Make sure that animal looks good when it goes to state fair.
Family project, you know.
Yeah, I know. I know. Amen. Amen, my friend. So I think that's probably, though, a pretty good summary. Is there anything else that you would say that you would really want heat stress-wise?
Oh, it's just mainly, you know, if we're looking at just a low-cost solution, some type of shade structure, some type of shade available to the animal. You know, if you don't have any trees, you definitely have to have some type of, Steve Higgins has a couple portable shade structures you need that could be functional.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. That's one thing I do struggle with. My alpacas, because of how our fields are laid out, don't have great shade in a number of their fields. That's one of the reasons we are so grateful that they do respond well to water. I mean, most of them have run-in sheds, which helps, but we don't always like them to spend that much time in the run-in sheds because they tend to get the floors wet in there, and then it tends to it's just more maintenance for us on the back end to keep them clean, but in this kind of weather we will certainly encourage them to come in the shade and the heat of the day, and we will bite the bullet on cleaning out those, and then we will actively work on giving water sources.
I have a question. Alpacas like the sheep where they have that outer layer of kind of crud on their, like the sheep have the outer layer of wool, like when they have their coat, it's the outer layer of the dirty wool, and then underneath it's easy to trim because you got it's cleaner, I guess. Are they similar? Is it?
Because alpaca don't have that lanolin, they don't have that greasy structure in there that protects, that keeps the dirt from working its way all the way down. They don't have that.
Oh.
So they will work dirt in. I have what's known as a Surrey alpaca, so they look more like a dreadlock. It's a small curled structure that hangs down. And so we will get stuff that works its way all the way back to the skin, dirt-wise. The Wakai have more of they look more like a teddy bear, so they're more fluffy. They also will get stuff in there. You can brush them a little bit easier. You don't necessarily want to brush the Surrey because you can brush the lock out.
Oh, okay.
Similar, if you brush someone with curly hair, the hair just gets bigger. That's sort of what happens with the Surrey. Like, you can break the lock structure apart, and then it doesn't come back together well, right? You've just broken the lock. So they just have lots of little skinny curls instead of pretty locking curls. Whereas the Wakai, because they're kind of fuzzier, it's a little bit easier to brush them. But at the same time, they can also bring all that dirt all the way through. Their fiber isn't as long, and it just doesn't have that texture that allows them to build up that crud on the outside and not bring it in.
Does it make it more difficult, you think, to trim them or some degree? Or
it does if you're not careful about how you maintain them. So we're pretty careful to clip all of their fields so that we don't end up with a lot of briars or
cockle burrs.
Those types of things are very hard, and it's very hard to get them out of the fiber. If you have to pull them out, break up the lock structure doing that too. They do dust bathe, and they like dust bathing, and that actually is not a problem. Because they don't have that lanolin and stuff, they're not sticky. the dirt will work its way back out. Small particles of dust and dirt are fine. It's only when you get those larger things that kind of get stuck in the fiber that it's more of a problem. And the mud and the muck stuff, if it's too much, it'll tag them like it does on a cow.
Yeah.
And that's not ideal. You don't want that. And they're digestively, they're like a small ruminant. They have that hindgut, and they have their feces comes out in small pellets.
Okay, similar to sheep.
Similar to sheep. So it's fairly hard, but the problem is that if they also urinate and they defecate in the barn, then you end up with enough moisture there that when they walk it, they can walk it down and then make
the mats.
Make a mat, and then they can lay on it. And that's what we really want to avoid, just from a health standpoint too. It's not ideal to have them laying in it. And we don't typically bed our barns in summer. In the winter, we tend to bed them to keep them dry, but in the summer, we don't heavily bed our barn spaces. We might have a little bit of straw or something in there just to keep it dry, but we actively try not to have a lot of stuff in there summer, because we want them to be able to lay down on the concrete.
All right, I was just curious about, yep. Because you do trim them. Yeah, when you do trim them, how much more of a pain is that?
And I will say that people that trim alpacas will say that they go through blades faster on animals that are dirtier. Yep. They fully acknowledge that dirt does work its way all the way down. So it's unlike a sheep where they can get underneath it and kind of go. They can't really do
that.
Okay. So that's our work on small ruminants for the day. Hopefully you learned something new. I always learn something new. Anything that's on the goal list for next week?
So, and I know it's a long time of year, but we do have availability and the equipment there. So we might try to spread some manure over the weekend.
Okay.
So we've got the 4th of July coming up here. So probably try to spread some manure. We need to cut one more field, but weather outlook looks like it's a little rainy. So we'll probably have to hold off. And so probably just be maintenance. And we have my other brother, he's going to do a run down to Texas and get more goats.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we will be bringing hay in if we can get out amongst the rainstorms, if we can get some hay in dry that we have purchased to fill one of our barns for our personal use. We'll also be working on trying to schedule in getting those cows worked. But it looks hot enough that I'm not comfortable working them in the next few days. I'm hoping around the 4th we get a little bit of a break and a little bit of a cooler front comes through and we get a little bit better chance. The 90 degree heat in the middle of the day is just too much. And there's enough cows on that farm, and that farm doesn't operate that well, that it will take a while to work that group. So we need to pick a day that the high is not in the 90s. And then of course that water tank, maybe by some miracle, we will come back next week and I can say it's done. If not, it'll be the week after that, but
at some point.
But at some point in the near future, hopefully we have a water tank functional there. And with that, I guess we will end our podcast for today and be back next time.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Have You Heard is a production of the University of Kentucky College of Agriculture, Food and Environment, along with the Department of Biosystems and Agricultural Engineering. Discover what's wildly possible at ca.uky.edu.